relax, feel free. We are not here to embarrass you, but to conduct an interview so that we can find the suitable candidate. Therefore, relax and feel free. If you didn't need a sip of water, you are allowed to do that. And I am Jojo James. I'm chairing this panel. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. We will ask you some questions. Thereafter, the members will also ask you questions. They will introduce themselves before they do that. Therefore, my question to you is, in fact, not a question. Can you please introduce yourself by telling us your background, experience, and why do you want to be a public service commissioner?
Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Firstly, thank you very much for inviting me for the interview. Appreciate it. A bit about myself. I have 27 years experience in public service. Started off at the grassroots level as an administrative clerk and worked myself up through the levels, senior admin clerk, administration officer, right through to a senior employee relations officer, to a deputy director, and to a director that I am right now. I have worked since the beginning with personnel management. I worked through the ranks doing supply chain management for a brief moment in Cape Town for a year. I was working at the Department of Transport. We were marketing private number plates. Other than that, I was very much involved in employee relations and debt collection at the Department of Agriculture. And then I worked my way through to the Public Service Commission as a deputy director who was working with labor relations and was promoted 5 years ago to be a director, also controlling labor relations improvements. The reason why I think I will be a good commissioner is because of my experience, like I just indicated. Having 27 years experience, I do know exactly what the official or the employee out there experiences on a day-to-day basis, and I also know what is expected of a junior manager, a middle manager, as well as a senior manager, because I occupy all of those functions and roles. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell the panel what is your understanding of the values and principles of the Public Service Commission as enshrined in Section 195 of the Constitution? You can name few or elaborate where you want to elaborate.
Sure, as you indicated, the Public Service Commission derives its mandate primarily from Section 195 and 186 of the Constitution. Section 195 spells out the values and principles enshrined in the Constitution, and that is what the Public Service Commission has to ensure that it implements and takes or promotes those values and principles. Some of the values and principles that are in the Constitution relate to promoting professional ethics, for example. There's 9 principles, and I don't know if you want me to spell them out for you, but I'll give you elaborate, because it's, for me...
That's few, you are not compelled to list them all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's respect for professional ethics, I don't know what's happening to me. It's like I'm tired, sorry.
I know all of you. Relax. Feel free, we are not horrible people.
I understand.
We are honorable people. Yeah.
Honorable.
Yes.
You're not honorable. So basically there's ethical integrity, honesty, openness, transparency, and you must conduct use of effective, efficient, economical use of resources, amongst others. You must be transparent in your dealings with public servants. Transparent, honest, integrity. Those are the principles. Non-sexism, non-racialism. Attending to the needs of the people.
What is your understanding of the functions of the Public Service Commission?
Okay, the Public Service Commission derives its mandate, like I said, from the Constitution, Section 185, 196. The Public Service Commission must operate independently, because it's only one Public Service Commission. And the core function, I think, is in Section 196.2, where it says you must promote ethical public servants, promoting professional ethics, and my words are not escaping me, but okay, I'm going to relax and tell you basics, right? The Constitution is clear. It gives the mandate of the Public Service Commission, sets out the different functions of the Public Service Commission. Amongst them, there must be promotion of ethical conduct. There must be fair labor practices, investigations, monitoring, evaluations of public service departments. That could be national and provincial. It's arguable that the mandate is very broad because it includes local government, but for now, due to financial constraints, the Public Service Commission is confined itself to national and provincial departments. We perform an oversight function in that we ensure that departments comply with the values and principles enshrined in the Constitution. When appointing employees within the department, they have to do so, or departments have to do so, in line with the values and principles enshrined in the Constitution, as well as the Public Service Act, the Public Service Regulation, and all the applicable provisions and enabling provisions that relate to employment in the public service. So we also have we are a custodian of good governance. That's the main hinge on what the Public Service Commission focuses on. And it's an all-encompassing outcome that we seek to achieve when we say good governance. So we look at everything from leadership to recruitment and selection, and the use of resources that have to be done so economically, efficiently, effectively. In a nutshell, that's what the Public Service Commission does.
Honourable Schreiber is okay.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, Ms. Bosch. My name is Leon Schreiber. I'm a member of this panel and also the Committee on Public Service and Administration. So my question starts out with a bit of a statement first. The Constitution provides for a strong role for the PSC in upholding the principles of public administration. One function is to give directions aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures relating to recruitment, transfers, promotions, and dismissals comply with the values and principles that you spoke about public administration. And my question then is, what is the best strategy for the PSC to ensure that government departments appoint competent and dedicated public servants, particularly at senior management level? How do we realize this goal? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Schreider. With regards to directions that the Public Service Commission makes, those relate to appointments, recruitment, selection, dismissals, and any career incidents that relate to public servants. Okay, the best way I can say that we can ensure that the public service is appointing competent senior managers, as you said. Okay, I would like to refer you then to the National Development Plan, specifically chapter 13, which speaks about a capable public service. And in that essence, there's a proposal there when you appoint a senior, when you appoint senior officials or senior manager in the public service, you have to make sure that you look at the merit. The person must be merit-worthy. The word that they use is meritocratic, okay? Appointments or recruitment and selection of staff. To get those, you need to inculcate some sort of loyalty, dedication, commitment, and an individual that is looking at constitutional transformation. You also have the person has to have a vision of developing the nation, the state. There must be common understanding of what is expected of senior managers. So, to ensure you get that, I would say that you need to have in educational institutions, it should be let's just say. They should be curricula that caters for making the public service a career of choice. So they must be curricula that's teaching the public servant or that's teaching people that would like to be in the public service how to promote the values and principles as they appear in the Constitution. And also that they must work towards a developmental state. And to get a developmental state, it means you're empowering a person to be able to accomplish their own goals as well. I can think of that. That's how you would ensure that you appoint senior managers or senior officials in the public service that have the caliber to promote the constitutional values and principles. And sorry, it's very vital that when you do appoint senior officials in the public service, you look at fairness, equity, and experience. For example, if you look at developing countries like Malaysia and Mauritius, for example, senior officials are appointed having 25 years experience in the public service. And in this instance, we could learn lessons from countries like that. Thank you,
Honourable Chair. Good morning, or good day. The other one, Ms. Botch.
Yeah.
No, I nearly said doctor, but she's expiring, I'm sure. But I'm just smiling, Chair, because he just spoke about the experience, because from where I'm seated, sometimes the experience of 100 days could be equal to one day.
Mm-hmm.
It's more subjective, it depends. But quickly, Chair, you have partially came to the space or the area that I would like to ask, which is the developmental state, and the NDP makes an emphasis in terms of South Africa needs to build a capable state that plays a developmental and transformative role, as it were. One question which is in two forms. The first one, What are the challenges that hinders public administration to potentially realize a developmental state as envisaged? Two, what sort of public service is required by South Africa to achieve the developmental objectives? Hence, Chair, as the Chair partially responded to my question. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, the challenges that the public service faces in achieving its developmental state. Okay, I can draw knowledge from the NDP, National Development Plan, which actually says that we have problems or challenges with regards to the political administrative interface. In that, the Public Service Commission defines the political administrative interface as the terrain within which the EAs, executive authorities, and heads of departments exchange, communicate. The problem there is there's a separation of powers, right? And with the separation of powers comes the fact that the Public Finance Management Act, or the PFMA, provides, equips the HOD with the power of the financial management, powers of accountability, the financial management accountability is accredited to the HODs, whereas the Public Service Act, for example, empowers the executive authority to make appointments on levels 14 downwards in the public service. So with that said, there is some sort of hesitancy on the part of the EA, executive authority, to delegate those powers to the HOD. And when that happens, we have some sort of instability in the department. An EA, it's not mandatory of him to delegate those powers to the HOD, but it would be beneficial if he did so. And the National Development Plan, as it recommended, that those powers should be given to the HOD instead of the EA. Okay, that's one of the challenges that I can think of, your political administrative interface. Then you have issues. With their challenges, the results are that you'll have political instability, you'll have in-house resistance, or you get instances where there is personality clashes between the HOD and EA in the department. The department then suffers as a result. People will lose interest, or they lose trust, in the department or in the state to deliver on its mandate or its goal or strategy. That's one of those are the challenges that I can think of hand sitting over here, knowing that's not an exam. And then the other challenges that I can think of offhand, why we are not reaching our goals, is because we are employing people that don't have the capacity or the skill or the expertise. And because, people tend to job hop, and by job hopping, the institution loses the institutional knowledge and experience of that person. The problem is there's no stability, and people don't have that common goal of trying to, take the country in the direction of a developmental state, a developed state. If there's no loyalty, then you're going to have you're going to have a state that's always performing mediocre. Whereas if you promote career pathing, for example, and job growth, then you're going to get a department or government that's performing optimally, and the needs of the people will be met, and everybody's going to encourage each other towards achievement of common goal and a more economical, vibrant career of choice, should I say, in the public service and serving the people in such an assembly. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, folks. I'm Miriam Kiwi, a member of the panel, and also a member of the committee. My question would be on good governance. Effective governance in the public sector encourages better decision-making and the efficient use of resources. Now, my question, first question is, how would you define good governance? And the second one, what are the five main principles of good governance within the context of a democratic government and efficient public service? Those are the two questions.
Thank you, Honorable Miriam Kiki. Thank you for your question. It's quite academic question. However, I will attempt to answer you based on practical experience. Define good governance. Good governance, to my understanding, is the use, economics teach you that you must make use of resources effectively and efficiently. So all resources are limited. We don't have unlimited resources. So good governance then is to make use of what we have most efficiently and effectively. Good governance would then also mean that you are able to take your human resources and ensure that they are effectively used. Good governance would be to ensure that when you have human resources, they are delivering on the needs of that the needs of the people are met. Okay. Good governance is to monitor the way people are using resources at their disposal. Good governance. There's a lot of things that you can do to governance in a good way. Okay, that's in a nutshell. By monitoring, evaluating, assessing, investigating, researching, until you come to a point where you can say, okay, you know, at any given stage, you know what the needs of the people are, and how to meet their needs, and you constantly have to monitor the situation to ensure that anything that changes is taken care of. So, principles of good governance. I'm going to guess, because I'll be honest, I don't know if I'm in the right, I'm gearing towards the right direction here. But I would say principles of good governance then would be integrity, honesty, transparency, efficiency, effectiveness, along those lines. Because you need all of those constitutional values and principles anyhow to bring about good governance. That's what I would think. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes. Ms. Boss, there is a huge loss of public money due to corruption, and especially in the case of public servants doing business with the state. Now, this is a particularly important issue, I think, because there is already legislation in place that seeks to prevent this, and yet the practice still continues. In your view, what can the PSC do more broadly? What should be done to make sure that this practice comes to an end of public servants doing business with the state? Thank you.
Well, as you know, PAMBOL has passed, and it says, amongst other things, that public servants may not do business with the state. That's a positive, bringing that law into pass, that is a positive step in the right direction, because now public servants obviously will be taken to task if they do not stop their practice immediately. What's interesting for me is that when you look at the mandate, for example, of the Public Service Commission, it shows that there are basically three specific disciplines that's important. Number one is your labor relations. Number two is your integrity, ethics, anti-corruption, and the other is your monitoring and evaluation. Now, because of my experience and because of the type of work that I do at the Public Service Commission, I'm mostly focused on labor relations. But what I've seen is that if you don't get your labor relations right in any government department, labor relations means your discipline, your grievances, listening to the complaints of the individual worker. Now, if you don't get that right, you're going to get a corrupt individual, because the public servants become ill-disciplined, because you now are not exercising discipline or meting out sanctions when you should. So if you don't do that, you're going to get the corrupt official, and when you get a corrupt official, it just festers into a bigger, much more horrible picture, should I say, the country then will suffer. So what can the Public Service Commission do to eradicate corruption? You've got to educate, firstly, the people, to show them what corruption has the potential to do to any economy or any country. And then by educating the employee or the public servant, you are going to create an awareness that corruption doesn't pay. In the long run, it's going to eat up the economy, and the economy will suffer, and so will the people. Other than making people aware of the ills of corruption, you can also exercise, I said, discipline, because you will then nip the problem at the bud before the person can even think about doing something that's wrong, because it just takes a simple transgression to make, and a person will get away with the transgression for that person to resort to a bigger transgression, a worse transgression that results in corruption.
Yes, very briefly, Chair. Okay. You mentioned the mandate of the PSC. You're speaking about corruption, etc. Do you think the Public Service Commission, in its mandate, does have enough teeth to actually implement and affect some of the things that you're talking about?
Okay. When we talk corruption, we can either talk financial corruption. Okay. When we talk financial corruption, the PPSC does have a mandate when it deals with financial misconduct cases, any misconduct case for that matter, especially when it deals with public funds, is actually a criminal transgression as well. And is not only can the person that's guilty of that financial misconduct be charged criminally, they also have the potential to be dismissed from their work, from their position that they occupy. Remember also, the Public Service Commission is also guided by the law, and case law suggests that any activity, corruption or other misconduct, for example, the official or the person involved has to deal with the situation. Sorry, the person involved has to face the law. Okay, so in that respect, yes. If the PSC identifies corrupt activity, the route that it will follow is the legal route. So in that sense, yes, they are, there is teeth, and we use the teeth of the court.
Consistency, fake check. What is your view, Ms. Botch, in terms of there's this perception that public service senior management doesn't want to be vetted? What is your take on that? Thank you.
I'm not aware that senior management doesn't want to be vetted, because any position on a senior management level, the person is informed before they are appointed that they are subject to be vetted. So if you're not vetted, the possibility exists you might not get the position. And also, you know, if you go on a senior level, it used to be only director levels or senior management levels upwards that had to do financial disclosures, for example. Now lower levels have to disclose their finances. So, yeah, I don't see that as a... I've never heard that officials don't want to be vetted. Not in my understanding. Maybe private sector, but public sector is like compulsory.
Thank you, Ms. Bosch. You are now speaking to Honorable C. Bisi, a member of the Portfolio Committee. I'm going to take you into two questions, which will be question 6 and 7. Question 6 is about strengthening of oversight if you are being appointed. So can you tell us, how do you think the PSC can, one, strengthen its own oversight? Two, how do you think the PSC can strengthen oversight by Parliament? Thank you.
Have a think there. Strengthening our oversight role. How are we going to strengthen our oversight role? Okay. We basically rely only on the Constitution and our mandate. And our mandate is very clear. It speaks to our ability, or it speaks to our role as an oversight body as is. So to strengthen it, you've got to have advocacy sessions with departments. You would have interaction with your EAs, for example. I would say that we must have stakeholder engagements. We've got to ensure that a rapport is created between heads of departments, your DGs. Yes, departments should feel free to be able to come to the PSC, for example, if they need some sort of guidance and interaction, or if for example, the PSC issues recommendations and the EA does not wish to implement such recommendations. there should be open engagements between the EA and the Public Service Commission to try and establish why is it that the EA does not want to implement the recommendation, and then with these engagements, the Public Service Commission can possibly explain to the EA why exactly it is that we come up with this recommendation and what good implementation of their recommendation will do for the department and the country as a whole. We'd also do research, because you've got to research a particular department before you know exactly what the goal is for that department, and then with the oversight role that we play, we've got to, like I said, engage with the particular heads of departments and ministers or EAs, depending, of course, whether it's national or provincial. And then our oversight role to Parliament, or because the PSC reports to National Assembly, and must do so at least once a year. When presentations are made to Parliament on the PSC's investigations and recommendations that it's making, perhaps that could happen more than once a year. We can improve that oversight, a responsibility that we do have.
Question 7. During the State of the Nation address, President outlined 7 priorities for the 6th administration. Among is to build capable, ethical, and developmental state, which is what Chapter 10 of the Constitution envisages. So now, what role should the PSC play in ensuring realization of building capable, ethical, and developmental state? Thank you.
Okay, the PSC's role in building a capable and ethical and development state, number one, is when we appoint senior managers, for example, we have to ensure that they are knowledgeable and experienced, and that it's done so in fairness. We've got to eradicate the problem of poverty and inequality. That's what the NDP hopes to achieve. So by building a capable and ethical public service in a developmental state, the PSC then the role would be to ensure that it might have to expedite the appointment of the head of administration. Okay. By doing so, it's going to ensure that SODs or DGs report to the head of administration on operational issues and administrative issues. And then it must also ensure that when the issue of the hybrid appointment of SODs, the PSC is going to be involved, and I believe that the NDP recommendation is actually a good recommendation when it says the PSC should play a role together with the administrative head in appointment of the head of the department or senior manager. This is a good role that for the purposes of independence, this is a good role that the PSC can play with the head of administration, which is still to be appointed, because then it doesn't take away the powers of the EA, because currently the Public Service Act provides for those powers of appointment, or gives those powers of appointment to the EA. And with the way that the proposal is, the head of administration, the PSC, will actually shortlist or come up with the shortlisted candidates and provide that list to the EA, and the EA will be able to select a candidate from that list. Okay, but not answering your question, it's something that I thought of, and I should have used that in an answer before what I just mentioned. But this is also what's building a capable and ethical and development state. We are making sure that the people that we appoint are people that are going to develop our state. A development state does not exist in isolation. It cannot be done on its own by government. We need the people, we need the citizens to be able to transform our constitution. And by doing that, you need to give them the tools to grow and to perform and for them to move to a more economical state. So the poverty and inequality is removed and people work towards a common goal. We must have a shared vision. This is how you would then build an ethical and developmental state. You're going to ensure ethics is promoted. A person must be able to live by norms and standards that are set. It's going to be inbred, it's going to be taught to them at grassroots level or even elementary level. Adults' basic education can also ensure that ethics are developed in the individual so that when we do work towards getting a better state, we're going to have individuals that are working together for common goal, towards building this country, towards ensuring that we are on par and a par with first world countries, for example, in 2030. And we work towards that by ensuring that we use the resources that we do have and that people ethics must be seen to be done. People must be ethical in their conduct. They must live being an ethical human being. And by living that ethics out, you're actually developing the people, you're developing the country to be more capable. So that's how you would build a capable development.
Developed states,
would I say.
Thank you. Ms. Bosch, thank you for coming to the interview. My question here is around the finance and the growth and the disclosure. My name is Marconi, member of parliament and member of this panel. The financial disclosure framework is aimed at preventing conflicts of interest by requiring members of the senior management service to disclose their financial interest. Then the question is, provide an explanation on how the financial disclosure works.
Thank you, Honorable Member McCauley. Just a slight correction. The financial disclosure does not only now require senior managers to disclose their financial interest, it's also lower middle managers as well. All right. How we do it is we do e-disclosure. Senior managers disclose their financial interest by the 1st of April every year. And the Public Service Commission scrutinizes those financial disclosures. At one stage, they were only doing it, although scrutinizing those financial disclosures, maybe about 60-70% of them. But lately, we've done 100% of financial disclosure. I'm talking about 10,000 odd disclosures that were made by managers and senior managers. And then there is a database that's kept. And if it's found that there is a conflict of interest, for example, that is followed up, and the necessary course of action is taken. Thank you.
The second question is, the power to appoint in South Africa is assigned by Section 3 clause 7 of the Public Service Act. Ministers or MSCs can delegate the power to officials within the department. Now, what are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? And the second part of it is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and capable state? The second question is, what can...
I'm just waiting.
Okay.
I'm just writing.
The first one
was two-pronged already, I think.
Yes, the first part and the second part.
Yeah.
On the first question.
Okay.
Did you get the second part of it?
Okay, let me just ensure that I did capture what you asked. You said appointments in the public service, is in line with the Public Service Act?
Yes.
All right, and then you said, what are the challenges in that respect? And then you talk about professional, and then I stopped there, sorry.
Oh, that was the second part, whereby, in fact, with that was sort of the preamble whereby I was reflecting as to where does it emanate from when I mentioned the Public Service Act, and also mentioning that ministers and MSCs can delegate the power. Then I go to the question to say, what are the major obstacles, which are challenges? You got that one. The second part of it is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and capable state?
Okay. Right, the Public Service Act does delegate, the Public Service Act gives all the powers of recruitment and selection of level 14 downwards to the EA, the Minister. We have found, or I have found in my career working at the Public Service Commission, that this is not delegated, that power to appoint employees. It remains in the powers of the EA. So the EA does not delegate in a hurry, but ideally it would be nice, it would be good practice if he delegates that powers to appoint to the HOD or the Director General. That is the challenge. And then because of that challenge, we have a lot of political interference in appointments of employees in the public service. So the National Development Plan, like I said, proposes that those delegations be handed over to the HOD or DG in the public service, and then by doing so, it will ensure that the HOD is hands-on, is aware or knows exactly what employees report to him directly and who is that appointed. Whereas if you get the EA who's responsible for the appointment, you're going to face challenges in that the person or people that are appointed, because remember, EAs are mostly working with policy formulation, whereas once they formulate their objectives, then that objective should appear on the performance agreement of an HOD. So EA should not really interfere in micromanaging the implementation of the policy that they have formulated. It should form part of the performance agreement of the HOD, and then implementation takes place at HOD level, cascading down to obviously the senior managers and lower levels. So when you ask me if it's effective, I have experienced that in cases it is effective, especially when that power has been delegated, because it shows that there is a level of trust between the EA and the HOD, DG for that matter. And there's always room for improvement, and with the NDP's suggestion that the PSC become involved in the appointment of employees or senior managers, that will definitely improve. It will ensure that people that are appointed have the experience and the knowledge and the expertise, and they are the right people for the right job. Because currently, like you said, people are appointed without having that sufficient experience or qualification, or they don't have the professional ability. And if you're sitting in positions of authority or sitting in position of, I would say, high positions, leadership positions, and you appoint the wrong people, and in instances we see, remember the Public Service Commission has a report, State of the Public Service 2010 report. I'll give you an example. Indicated that we have appointed people that don't have the skills and expertise, and they are sitting in those positions. The problem is that we foresee is that in the long run, they won't be able to even deliver on the NDP mandate, leave alone function in the positions that they occupy currently. So a lot, the PSC, for example, creates norms and standards, has been creating norms and standards, but the NDP suggests that we can, our role can be, heightened by ensuring that we do get more involved in coming up with these norms and standards when you create posts, for example. The fact that there are guidelines in place is actually ensuring that the public service now is able to recruit people, that the right person for the right job, the right fit. The person must have the relevant qualifications and expertise to do the job, and not be appointed because of political connections, for example.
Chairperson, now that Ms. Bosch has mentioned that there are no relevant, at some stage there are no relevant qualifications for to certain jobs, and also there is that interference of the political senior. Then how can the Public Service Commission eliminate that?
Okay, the Public Service Commission can set norms and standards. Okay, the setting of norms and standards means guidelines on how a person should be recruited. There should be standardization of what is the requirements for specific posts. So there should be benchmarking. There should have been proper research, job evaluation before appointing a person. There must be already a standard set to say, okay, for this type of post, you need to have this qualification, you need to have this experience, and it should be cast in stone, actually, to allow suitable candidates to apply. Thank you.
Dr. Saiba wants to make a follow-up.
Be fine. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
So on the topic of appointments, Ms. Bosch, I think the question then is, Do you think that cadre deployment in any form, practiced by anyone, is ethical and appropriate, or is that something that should be abolished in this process of review?
I would say it depends on the type of cadre and the experience that, or the benefit of that placement of the continent. If it's going to enrich the department or enrich a community, then by all means deploy the person. But I don't think it's unethical. Provided it's done within prescribed requirements and guidelines, and it's monitored and evaluated, I suppose it shouldn't be a problem. So anything can work as long as it abides by certain principles. Thank you.
Ms. Bosch, thank you very much for availing yourself for this interview. The results will be communicated to you in writing, because we still have some other candidates to interview. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you,
Chair. Is there any question you want to put to the committee? Or comment if you don't have a question?
Yeah, I would like to say, I have a suggestion. If I am appointed to this post, and because of my experience, because remember I've been involved in various reports and research investigations, and in the course of my investigation, I found that there's inconsistency in position of sanctions, for example, in the public service. And you'll find that one employee will be guilty of theft of paper or pen or whatever the case is, and then you'll get another that, for example, stole a large sum of money, yet both will be placed on precautionary suspension and then given a 3-month suspension, for example. I'm just giving you how inconsistent it is, so the way sanctions are imposed in the public service. So I would make sure that there is some sort of consistency in that. For example, in the banking sector, if you steal a pen, you know you're going to be dismissed. If you do this, you know what's going to happen to you next. So we need to come up with something like that in the public service as well, to create consistency, to know, so that employees know if they transgress this or find themselves guilty of this sort of misconduct, these are the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wolf. You are relieved now. Thank you.